Hello, welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we have one of my favorite guests, Craig Johnson, who has written a new Walt Longmire book called As the Crow Flies. This is, if I'm not mistaken, number 8 in this series. Oh, look, it says a novel on there. I didn't notice that there. Hello, how are you?
I'm good, David. How are you?
Hi. Is that the first time they've written a novel like that down there on the...
No, but they're very surreptitious about it. Like, they're very crafty about it. It's actually appeared in a number of the novels, and let's see, I'm trying to think about, there's one point where it's, I think the last book, well, in this book it's actually on the bracelet in the crow's
right.
Claw, and then, the last one, it was the beads in Virgil's headdress that said novel.
Really?
And then the one before that was Junkyard Dogs, and it was actually on the sign that's on the chain link fence sign behind the dogs, and then the one before that, the dark horse, it was actually in the chain that's holding the horse. And so and I think, yeah, that might have been...
That's a good selling point. I didn't even think of, I'm going to start selling the books like that. See if you can find where it says a novel in it.
It's absolutely.
Like, there's those cottages by David Winter, and he always puts a mouse in them.
Uh-huh,
that he makes, and it's sort of like, that's what it reminds me of, and that's, I have one of them here actually, and you can actually see the mouse if you look really carefully. But it's really cool. Anyway, this is number 8. Now, I guess my question is why? I mean, these are all mystery novels. But do you would you rather them be called novels than rather than mystery novels or?
I don't know. I really it's probably more Viking Penguins, you know, business to decide. I think that, you know, they're more of a literary press, you know, so I think they look at the books as being, you know, on the literary side, you know, but most assuredly, you know, they're crime fiction. So I don't know if there's any kind of, you know, conscious effort, you know, to try and, like, move them in either direction by having that on there. But I think generally they tend to put that on all of their fiction pieces, like at any kind of fiction book. The Viking Penguin tends to put out, it will say a novel.
Of course, I've read all of the books, and you know me, I read them as soon as I can get my hands on one.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that.
Well, I always do. But I get confused when I see that on books, and when I think they're mysteries and they say novel, I say, well, wait a minute, what am I missing? Is that really not a mystery? But anyway, I don't want to spend too much time on that. But
I sometimes refer to the books as being kind of literary fiction, but the only thing is that Walt just happens to be a sheriff. And so it puts him in, you know, a little bit more contact with the criminal element, I think. So that might be part of it. But yeah, I don't know.
It's an interesting. It's interesting when you think about it. Sometimes I look at things and I have a question, you know. Anyway, As the Crow Flies, this is number 8. Now, it's hard to believe it's number 8 already. It seems like...
I know. You're telling me it's kind of hard to believe that it's number 8 already. It kind of snuck up on me like this, I have to admit. But it's been, you know, it's a blast. You know, I mean, I'm having such a good time writing the series.
You really do. It's really not hard work to you.
Well, I get a lot of freedom. I mean, you know, this kind of goes back a little bit to what we were discussing there earlier, in the sense that, you know, it's, you know, I'm with a literary house, like, and they pretty much give me as much freedom as I want to do whatever I want to do, however I want to do it. And, you know, that means that, you know, I, you know, they don't put a lot of, you know, it's not like I have to put Death Hunt, you know, I have to put like 2-word titles on my books, or, you know, they force me to try and do, you know, some kind of a formula that's, you know, going to land me on the New York Times bestsellers list.
Well, you don't have like a dart you throw on the board and it just lands on the title.
They just let me do what I want to do, however I want to do it. I mean, you know, the contracts that I have for these books, you know, says that it must be a mystery novel and it must have Walt Longmire in it. You know, and that's the only, you know, kind of...
That's actually in the contract. Help out that. I didn't know they took it that far.
I mean, most generally, when you have a contract, you know, with a publisher, it's a lot longer than that. It's generally a lot longer than one sentence. They don't generally even know what the books are about. They trust me, you know, to you know, write my own books. You know?
Now, is it hard to write the humor? I mean, your humor is so good in your books. I mean,
thank you. I don't know. To me, it's just a natural progression of the human you know, the human condition. You know, if you're going to have really developed characters, then there's going to be an awful lot of, you know, humor involved with those characters. And anybody that's ever had a hard job knows that, you know, that if you're going to have a hard job, you know, one of the ways you get through the day is with a sense of humor. And, you know, and with the job that, you know, a lot of people that are in law enforcement, I mean, that's the email that I get continually from, you know, police officers, sheriffs, highway patrolmen, you know, everybody in law enforcement. They always write me and they always say, you know, it's the humor in the books that gets me, because it seems very... very much, you know, the style of humor that I'm used to. Looked at, and you know, and it's not particularly comedy. It's more, you know, about the characters. It's more about the relationships,
right,
and that type of thing. And so, you know, to me, it's an essential part of the characters, because that's kind of what makes them human. I can always tell whenever somebody's written a piece of crime fiction that's never been around police officers before, because they're always so serious. You know, the books are so serious. And the characters have the case, you know, and they're going to solve the case, and they're going to deal with the case, and all this kind of stuff. And that's kind of hooey. Like that, I mean, you know, anybody who's ever had a hard job knows that, you know, all the time that you're dealing with that difficult job, you're also, you know, wondering if you have any food in the refrigerator. You're wondering if your pants are starting to fit too tight, you know. You're wondering if that relationship that you're in is really going to work out. I mean, there are all those same things that, you know, everybody else worries about. And so, and that lends, you know, it lends itself, you know, to that kind of humor to me that, that's kind of important, you know, to have that kind of multidimensional, you know, aspect of the characters in every book.
Right. Now, I should mention, this is from Viking, although you did mention that already, yes, the crow flies. And also the TV series, which starts June 3rd, in case anybody's curious.
It does. It's a TV series on A&E. Like that, it comes on, and I think it's 10 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time, like that, on A&E. And there are 10 episodes like that are running this summer.
Oh, they're going to do 10.
We're running the whole, you know, we're running the majority of the summer, which is, you know, kind of wonderful. But it's an interesting group of people like that. And, you know, I was very curious, you know, we've been doing this little courting dance, you know, with Hollywood now, you know, for, you know, not, you know, what's it been, like 7-8 years. And I was, you know, I don't know, I felt like, you know, there were two ways you could go. You could either go with a feature film or you could go with a television series. And the great thing about a television series, especially nowadays, you know, on cable, it's kind of exciting like that, because it gives you a lot more of a breadth, you know, of material to work with. I mean, you know, whenever you're able to do 10 episodes rather than 1 hour and a half, you know, episode, it gives you a lot more opportunity to tell a lot more stories and to delve into a lot more of the characters and the place.
Absolutely.
And,
like Game of Thrones, yeah.
Yeah, and since the books, you know, are, you know, they're based in, you know, the least populated county and the least populated state in America, you know, you need some time, like, to kind of develop, you know, these characters. And so whenever, you know, Greer Shepherd, you know, who's the executive producer for The Closer and Nip Tuck, and John Coveney and Hunt Baldwin and Chris Chulak, who's the executive director and director for Southland and ER and all of these other shows. I mean, it was a really good group of people to work with, because, you know, the shows that they do are very about character. They're very much about character and not, you know, just, you know, who.
Well, that's what makes your book so good. There's the characterization.
Well, I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case.
But do you worry about that, that there isn't enough characterization?
Oh, no. No, did I give that impression?
No, I just thought, well, the way you said, I hope so, like maybe, you know, you're
not sure.
Well,
no, I just, you know, you never want to say, yes, my books have, you know, more character than anybody else. So, there's no way you're ever going to hear those words come out of my mouth like that, but, you know.
I mean, I'm still picturing in my mind the last book, Walt Climbing the Mountain. I mean, I still have vivid videos in my mind of that,
of
those scenes.
And that's part of it. You know, I mean, are the characters compelling? I mean, that's, you know, that's kind of, you know, a lot of author friends of mine, you know, are asking me, you know, why is it they decided to make a TV show out of your books, you know, and there might be a little bit of dissatisfaction, you know, in some of those questions from other authors. But I think, you know, what it comes down to, it's always going to come down to the characters. You know, you're either interested in the characters or you're not. And, you know, and I like to think that these characters, you know, are interesting, like that have, you know, multidimensional aspects to them, like that, that, you know, that they, that they're fully developed, you know, and I guess in some ways that's, you know, one of the reasons why it is that they've gotten, you know, made into a television show.
I hope they have like a big commercial right in the middle of it for your book. That would be really great. Or at least have some of the characters reading the books. I mean, that's what they did in The Wire. They had them reading Laura Lippman books all through The Wire, you know. It's like,
well, what they had was I've got, you know, like a double-edged sword on this one, in the sense that they made me an executive creative consultant on the television show, which means I know where the porta potties are on set. You know, in essence, what they did was they wanted to make sure that they got Wyoming right, and they were very concerned, you know, with trying to, you know, emulate, you know, Wyoming from Southern California. And so they thought, you know, well, you know, here's a guy who lives in a ranch, you know, that's, you know, the nearest town has a population of 25, so he could probably be our Wyoming expert, you know. And so that's been kind of, helpful to them, I think. And so it was been a very strange relationship in the sense that, everybody pretty much told me, all the writers that I know, that basically what Hollywood does generally is just write you a check, hand it to you, and say, see you later, and you never hear from them again. But I have, like, weekly conference calls, with the production staff. I have, they send me the scripts, to go, through the scripts, and tell them, okay, yeah, this works, this doesn't work.
Really?
This happened in Wyoming.
That's exciting.
This works with this character, this doesn't work with this character. Because I've kind of been living in this world that they're just starting out in. I've been living in it for the last 8 years, and so it gives me a little bit of an advantage. And I mean, they even went to the point to where they sent me DVDs of the auditions for the actors that they were considering for different roles. And, Hollywood never does that, so it's been a unique situation, I think, with a very unique and wonderfully talented and secure group of people to work with.
Now, I don't know who, I used to watch Cassidy Freeman on Smallville. She's from Smallville, and I'm in love with her. I was in love with her on Smallville.
You watch Cassidy Freeman on Smallville.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
she's gorgeous.
she's just an interesting and a good actress, too. She's not no slouch. She's not one of these actors that just looks pretty and there's nothing else there. I mean,
she's a magnificent actress. There's actually, it's funny you should mention her like that, but there was actually a scene, between her and the actor that's playing Walt, Robert Taylor, on the front porch of Walt's cabin where they're she's trying to talk him into doing something, with his, with her mother's ashes. And it was so real and so good. David, I had to walk away. I could not watch them film the scene.
Really?
It was so painful to me like that I couldn't even watch it. And, it was like suddenly, boom, your characters are there in the same room with you and they're agonizing over this situation. And it's, just so human. It was just, more than I could bear to watch. I had to walk away. But yeah, she does a magnificent job. Like that, and Robert Taylor, the actor that's playing Walt, he's this great big 6'4" guy. He wears a size 8 cowboy hat. I don't know anybody in Wyoming that wears a size 8 cowboy hat. So he's this great big guy. But he's marvelous in the sense that he just, when he's thinking, you can see the wheels turning, that there's, just so much going on there. And he's handsome. Everybody always asks me, they always say, well, what's the biggest difference between the television show and your books? And my immediate response is, everybody's better looking in the television series than they are in my books. I don't think I really had the idea.
I have a bunch of ugly characters in my books.
So it was kind of interesting. And then Katie Sackhoff, from Battlestar Galactica.
Right.
She's playing Victoria Moretti. Lou Diamond Phillips is playing, Henry Standing Bear. It's a really stellar cast of people that they put together. And the thing I think that they were looking for more than anything else was just people who were really, really good actors and actresses, to just embody these characters.
Well, now I want to see the TV show. Now you've got me all excited about the TV show.
They've done a magnificent job, and it's not too far away. Thank goodness I'm not telling you this a year in advance. At least it's only a couple of weeks away on the very beginning of June. June 3rd at 10 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time on A&E.
Right. I mean, it's so exciting.
Sunday nights, I feel like we're the Disney hours.
Well, I'm going to have to give up Mad Men to watch this.
I think Mad Men will have run its course by the time that we start.
I hope so. I mean, I'm addicted to Mad Men, too. I mean, I get addicted to these TV shows. I know I'm going to get addicted to Longmire. This is a matter of time.
I'm really horrible because I'm no help at all like that because, they were asking me, who do you see Walt as? And I was saying things like, well, Joel McRae or, Gary Cooper. And they were like, but they've been dead for 40 years, Craig. And I was like, well, like Ben Johnson.
Can't we dig him up?
I was no help at all as far as the casting was concerned until they started sending me DVDs and I was able to look at them and say, yeah, that guy there, he's really good. Yeah, she would do. She'd be fantastic in the role. So, that was the only way that I could be any help to him.
Now they're all going to come to you for a raise, too.
Yeah, probably.
Let's get Craig to give. He's got some pull.
He should pony up. Come on.
Now, let's talk about As the Crow Flies. We're going to run out of time. We're not even going to be able to talk about the book.
Yes.
But usually your books come from some kind of an idea. Now, where did this idea? I mean, you tell such great stories about your ideas.
What this one came from was a couple of different things. First of all, there have been tons of newspaper articles about the difficulties that a lot of Iraq and Afghanistan veterans have been having coming back from the wars and with Walt and Henry both being Vietnam veterans it just seemed like the more things change the more they remain the same like that we're dealing with a lot of the same stuff that Walt and Henry dealt with after Vietnam. And so I was considering that. There were all, and then you know, there is an abnormal amount, you know, of Native Americans, of Indians, you know, who participate, you know, in the armed forces in the United States. Not many people know that, but it's like one of the largest percentages of any ethnicity, of any group. And so, you know, that was weighing on my mind, you know, as I was reading all these newspaper articles about these guys having trouble, you know, making the transition back into society. And then, you know, I knew this was going to be the wedding book. I knew this was going to be the book where, you know, Katie was going to marry, you know, Michael, you know, Victoria Moretti's little brother. And so I knew that that was going to happen on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation. And so I thought, okay, if this book takes place almost entirely on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, then this gives me, you know, an opportunity to kind of deal with a number of different things. This major issue, like that, but it also gives me an opportunity to deal with life on the reservation, like that. I mean, you know, it's a different world. You know, it's a sovereign nation unto itself, like that. And so I started thinking, well, if the entire book takes place up there, you know, Walt's got to be up there, you know, doing, you know, the research and trying to arrange, you know, for Katie's wedding, like that. And then, you know, of course, what happens is a young woman is killed, and the new police chief of the tribal police force, you know, on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation is a young woman by the name of Lolo Long, who has just returned from Iraq and just, you know, kind of fell into this job. And she really doesn't have any law enforcement experience, and so basically what she does to try and fend off, you know, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, like that, and the FBI, mm-hmm. taking this homicide investigation away from her, she kind of arrests Walt and presses him into being a mentor and, you know, teaching her, you know, how to, you know, go about a homicide investigation. And it's, you know, it's a different type of book, like that, because it's Walt without his resources. You know, it's Walt, you know, on the reservation, and he really doesn't have any jurisdiction there. So it makes for a difficult situation for him. And then also, you know, trying to be the father of the bride does nothing but complicate matters also.
And I'm reading the first sentence in the book. I want to know what Katrina Walk's Nice did to get kicked out of a joint like this for 61 days. I could do the audios of your books. So I have a good voice. Don't you think I could do the audios?
I don't know. You'd have to fight George Woodall for that. Like that.
Oh, okay.
Been doing them for a number of years now.
I'll give him a run for his money.
I gotta admit, like that. But yeah, the whole thing starts out, you know, at the White Buffalo Sinclair Station, like that, which is the convenience store in Lame Deer, Montana. And every single one of the locations that's actually in the book are, you know, are real locations up on the reservation. And I've got, you know, tons of buddies up there like that, but one in particular, a fellow by the name of Marcus Red Thunder, who's probably one of my best buddies, like that, and he's kind of the model for Henry in the books. And I don't know, to give you an indication of what, you know, the place is like, you know, he and I were actually, you know, driving my truck. I was, you know, doing research for the book, and we're driving back up from the Black Hills, going up towards the Little Bighorn battlefield. And we look on the side of the road, and there's this kid walking along. He's like 10 or 11 years old. He's walking along on the side of the road, and he's only got one shoe on. And so Marcus leans over, and he goes, "Pull over. I know this kid." And so I, you know, pull the truck over, and he rolls the window down, and he hangs out the window, and he looks at this kid, and he goes, "Hey! You lost your shoe!" And this kid, he's like 10 or 11 years old, you know, he turns around, looks at us, and he's got this big, beatific smile on his face, and he goes, "No! I found one!" You know, which kind of gives you an indication of just how indestructible these people are. You know, their spirit is just indomitable is what it is. And, if you don't think I didn't use that in the book, I did. Like that, because
that's great.
An opportunity. So.
Oh, yeah, well, it's such a great... I mean, you must get... I mean... You must have your notebook around all the time. Just, I got to write this down. And there's just so much good stuff that happens.
I keep a notepad and a pen right there in my breast pocket all the time, like just for those specific purposes.
When you start a book, though, when you sit down to first start writing the book, by then do you have the whole book planned out, or do you do it?
I do. Yeah,
everything's planned. I mean,
really strong outlines, and I have everything. You know, I mean, one of the things about writing, you know, what I tend to refer to as socially responsible, you know, crime fiction. I don't write a book where, you know, a couple of dozen people get killed by the end, and that's the book. I'm trying to say something, you know, with these books, and I think that speaks, you know, to a lot of the people that read crime fiction nowadays. An awful lot of the people that read crime fiction, they expect the same things. You know, they're a little more sophisticated, and so they expect the same things that they get from literary fiction. I mean, they want fully developed characters, they want an arc of storyline, they want, you know, social culpability, they want history, they want humor, they want all of these things, and they also want to know, you know, who the heck did it by the time they get to the end, too. And so if you're going to write that kind of, you know, complexity, I think, you know, you really have to sit down and think about, you know, well, what's the book about? You know, what is the plotting of the book? You know, what's the pacing of the book?
It doesn't sound like you struggle an awful lot writing a book.
No, I don't particularly struggle. I just put a lot of thought into it, you know, before I sit down to write it.
You just have a gift for writing.
Well, I hope. Okay, but I just, you know, I'm not a big one for just writing by the seat of my pants. I mean, I hear a lot of authors who say, you know, I just, you know, get started and see where it goes. That scares me to death. That would be like you and I jumping in a car and saying, let's drive to, you know, Nogales, Mexico, but let's not take a map. You know, I would be like, well, let's take a map with us. We can stick it in the glove box, and even if we don't use it, you know, we've got it. And that's kind of the way I look at the outlines of my books. It doesn't mean that things won't change, you know, or I won't have ideas, you know, or be open to improvisational moments, you know, as I'm writing the book. Mm-hmm. But I find it very handy to have, you know, something, some kind of an outline to go by, you know, whenever I'm writing the book.
Well, there's humorous stories, like the one with the kid with the one shoe. And you keep a lot of them in a book? I mean, you have a lot of those stories saved up?
Well, yeah, and I know, you know, I generally, you know, I'll know which book it is that, you know, that each, you know, story is going to fit into, you know, and, you know, I'll just, you know, keep those notes, you know, and write them down, and then I've got files like that, you know, with newspaper articles and magazine articles and photographs and, you know, and stories, you know, and things like that that I'll, you know, just pack away into a file, and I guess one of those files would generally just grow until the point where it reaches a critical mass. You know, and then, you know, then I need to write that book, and that's kind of the way I operate.
They got to get you on one of the morning shows with the TV show coming out. I think they'd want to get you on there to talk about the books. That's what they should do. I mean, just imagine
I'm doing a lot. I'm doing a lot of interviews.
I'm looking at all your. You're going to be in Pittsburgh too. Look at that.
Actually, Mechanicsburg actually is where I'm going to be. Not Pittsburgh, in Mechanicsburg.
Oh, it says Pittsburgh on this letter. The letter is lying to me.
Yeah, it is. The letter is lying to you. Because I'm going to be in Mechanicsburg rather than Pittsburgh. Yeah.
Oh, there's a funny story about that place, the Mystery Loves Bookshop. And I published it weekly. This was years ago, and I looked and I said it said there was a mystery bookstore in Oakmont, Pennsylvania, and I grew up and I went to Oakmont Elementary School, and I thought, oh my gosh, there must be a mystery bookstore downtown that I don't even know about. And when I found out it was near Pittsburgh, I was so devastated. I'm like, it's not in Oakmont. What happened to it? It's so weird, though. I mean, because I know it's in Oakmont, Pennsylvania. I guess it's still there, but I mean, I was so devastated. I'm like,
oh yeah,
we finally have a mystery bookstore in town.
I was there last year, as a matter of fact. Okay, but this one, I'm not looking to add any more stops on this one. This tour this year is actually the biggest one so far, and it's got 50 events on it.
Well, what's this Divorce House? This is some kind of an e-book story.
Yeah,
I haven't read that yet.
Yeah, Divorce Horse. Yeah, it's an e-special short story that Viking Penguin put out here. I think it was about 2 weeks ago.
That's cool. I have to read that. I'd forgotten about that. I think I got an email about it, and then I forgot about it. So she was on 24 also, Katie Sackhoff. I didn't realize that.
Yeah, she was.
That's why the name rings a bell. I was a big 24 junkie.
And she was in the Big Bang Theory. She's also in the new Reddick movie that's coming out. She's going to be in it too. So.
Now, how many words can you write a day? I mean, is there a limit, or some days can you write two or three chapters?
Oh, I just write, you know, and I don't really pay much attention to word counts, page counts, or any of that kind of
thing. Oh, really? Nothing?
I'm always thinking, you know, if you're counting your words or counting your pages or something like that, you're not really having a good time, are you?
You know? Yeah, right.
You know, if you're sitting there going, oh, I got to do another page, or else, you know, I can't quit until I get another page done. I don't want to read that page, you know. I'd much rather be inspired, like that, you know, to write, you know, and be fired up about it, you know. I mean, it isn't going to interest me that much if, you know, I'm just writing for rote, you know, just to get, you know, words down on a page. I mean, they have to be inspired words. They have to have something to say. And so, you know, some days, you know, I don't write so much like that because, you know, I have a ranch here in Wyoming, and so there's always something else to be out there doing, you know, and other things to be involved with.
You're the happiest, busiest man I've ever met. I mean, I've never seen you in a bad mood. And you,
you know, look what I do for a living there, David. I mean, really, you know, this is work. Are you kidding me?
But you work on your ranch. I mean, you do a lot of hard work.
I do. I built my ranch myself. Look at, and I run it myself. Look at, and you know, and but you know, I mean, it's a nice balance, you know, because you know, it's a very physical labor. It's outdoors, and that's very different, you know, from the work that I do, you know, when I'm writing. You know, when I'm writing, I'm inside. When I'm writing, it's more cerebral. You know, it's more, you know, sitting in front of a laptop and, You know, and it's a good balance, I think. I'm not the first, you know, writer to discover that, you know, that living, you know, having a rural existence, you know, where you have, you know, a lot of other things to contend with, you know, it keeps me involved in the, you know, in the environment. It keeps me involved, you know, out of doors and in Walt's world, you know, and that's kind of a nice place to be, I got to admit.
Now, are you ever going to be able to write two a year?
I don't know if I'll be able to write two a year, but I think I can probably write one and a half a year. I've got the ideas, you know, and I've actually even, you know, got a lot of work done on a couple of standalone pieces that I'm working on, and they're very different, you know, from the Longmire series.
Are they going to be full-length novels?
Yeah, they'll be full-length novels. As a matter of fact, one even takes place in Pittsburgh, so.
Really?
Now,
are they going to be published by Penguin, do you think?
Well, we'll see. I mean, I've got to get them finished first. Look, that's
yeah, that one. Might be important to finish them before they publish them. That's great. I didn't even know. That's something that I didn't even know about. That may be something John doesn't know about either. So
it's possible. Hardly anybody knows that. So here, you broke some news right here on the show.
Yes, really. Something. But I mean, working on a ranch is hard work. I mean, you can't be a slouch and work on a ranch. I mean, I'm just amazed.
Well, it's yours. Like that. I mean, you can if you're working for somebody else. Maybe you can slack off a little bit.
I guess it's an East Coast thing. I mean, people on the East Coast are always worn down. People.
A
lot of people that you come in contact with.
It's difficult. It's a difficult situation. You know, whenever you know you're. I mean, living in a city can do that to you. Like living in large populated areas. I mean, you know, you have to contend with a lot of people, lot of traffic, a lot of these different things. And I live. You know, my ranch is, you know, in northern Wyoming. You know, between the Bighorn Mountains and the Powder River, like that. And you know, the nearest town to me has a population of 25.
Is there any violence ever in your town?
Oh, there's some every once in a while. I mean, you can't have human beings and not have, you know, crime. I mean, I get the, you know, the Attorney General for the state of Wyoming's, you know, file on criminal activity, you know, on a yearly basis. Like, and it's, you know, more than you would think. Like that, I mean, it does happen. You know, it's nothing to the same scale as, you know, like, say, you know, Philadelphia or something like that. But, you know, it's a different, you know, it's a different world and a different kind of violence and different kind of crime.
And I'm just so happy Henry's back in this book too. I missed Henry in the last book. He didn't have a big part in the last book. And I'm sure you.
No, he didn't like that. But you had Virgil like that. So that, you know.
Well, that's true. Yes. But I missed Henry. I can't help it. I love Henry. You know, sue me. I love Henry. I always will. So.
Well, you got a lot of Henry in this book. He's got some really good lines and some really. Good
but do people write to you and say, you know, more Henry, or more of this person?
Oh God, people. You know, that's the two types of emails that I get after every book. I get two types. One is I get the emails that, you know, there was not enough of, you know, insert blank, you know, my favorite character. And it can be Henry, it can be Vic, it can be Lucian, it can be Ruby. It got to the point where I was even getting emails from people that said that there wasn't enough dog, you know, Walt's dog, you know, in the last book, you know. And so, you know, you just kind of, you know, you try and, you know, work the characters through, you know. I mean, Walt is always going to be, you know, kind of the pillar. The tent post, you know, that holds the big top up, you know, but
Walt's not all together though either.
Yeah, you know, it's difficult for him. Like, but I mean, then the other characters, you know, you cycle them through like that, you know, in different levels. I mean, there are going to be some books that there's a lot of them, and some that, you know, maybe there isn't so much of them like that. But I mean, the way I respond to that in one way is to say, well, if it was the same amount of the same characters, you know, in the same situations in the same locale in every book, then the books would be getting awfully formulaic, okay? And so one of the things I do to make each book different is, you know, to vary that degree.
And that's a point, though, to make. I've read books that are what they term cozies, that are set in small towns, that are very boring mysteries. I mean, your books are never boring.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Look, I hope that's not the case.
I have never read one of your books and said, this is boring, I can't finish this book. Never. It's never happened.
Well, thank you, sir.
Which means you're doing something right, because it's hard to keep my attention. Believe me, if I get bored, I'm going to tell you I'm bored.
Well, it's, you know, for me, it's a question of, you know, I mean, I'm going to get bored, you know, if I'm writing that type of stuff, you know. And so, to me, it's important to try and do something completely different, you know, with each book. I mean, the last book, you know, Hell is Empty, you know, was a metaphorical novel, you know, based off of Dante's Inferno. You know, whenever I was thinking about sending Walt, you know, after these escaped convicts back up into the Bighorn Mountains, you know, I knew it was going to be kind of a manhunt in the wood, you know, in the snow kind of book, and I thought, you know, that's been written before. That's been done before. Maybe you need to do something a little bit different. And that's when I started thinking, well, you know, Cesar Batoria, the Basque deputy, you know, is reading all these books, you know, trying to make up for his criminal justice degree. And I thought, well, which one of those books, you know, would be a good metaphorical, you know, foil, you know, for Hell is Empty? And I thought, you know, well, you've got that character Virgil White Buffalo, you know, from Another Man's Moccasin. So you have a Virgil. You have a guide, you know, for your Dante, who is Walt, you know, and it might be interesting to try and, you know, develop that idea that, you know, that Walt's, you know, journey, you know, into the, you know, the frozen, you know, landscape of the, you know, the wilderness area of, you know, the Bighorn Mountains, you know, would start mimicking, you know, Dante's, you know, tour through hell. And that's how that book kind of fell into place. But, I mean, you know, and this book is something that's completely different. Like that. And so, to me, that's kind of important, you know, for me as the writer, like that, and I hope for the readers, too.
I'm just amazed that you're as happy a person as you are. I can't imagine what your childhood was like. You had to have a happy childhood to be as
happy. I did have a happy childhood. It wasn't bad at all. Like that, so.
And you never, I mean, I as much as I've known you and I've seen you, I guess, 8, 9 times since you've been coming to the store. I mean, I've never seen you upset about anything. I mean, you're that most happy, and your happiness is very infectious. So, you know, people come to the signings because they like you as a person.
And that's
something you can't replace. I mean, that's something you can never, and people know that. And once they sense, you know, this is a really good person. This is somebody who really is enjoying coming to this event. You know, sometimes you go to an author signing and you realize the author's just gone through the motions. And they want to get out, you know, and you can't blame them if they've done.
To get out and go to the restaurant or go to the bar or something like that. I don't know. For me, you know, I mean, it's infectious simply because, you know, for me, I really enjoy meeting the people that read my books. I mean, that's you know, I'm fortunate in the sense that I really like the part of my job where I sit, you know, here at my ranch, you know, in a room by myself and type about my imaginary friends like that. And then I really enjoy going out on the road once a year, you know, to go and see, you know, my real friends, like at the people that are reading my books, you know. And that's, you know, I never have understood, you know, why it is, you know, that, you know, that there are authors that, you know, that don't enjoy that, that don't want to do it, that don't like it. You know, my response to that has always been, if you really don't enjoy it and you really don't like it, don't do it. You know, for gosh sakes, you know, you're not doing anybody favors, you know, by going out there and being miserable.
And it brings to the point, you know, I'm trying to get an author interview now, and I have, this is no joke, I have called the publishing company, it's got to be 13 times now. And I still don't have a firm date for the interview. And, you know, this is what you go through, doing what I love doing, which is this. I mean, I could spend all day just trying to get interviews, and I love every minute of it.
I'm easy, so I'm cheap.
I know, you are. You're not only easy, you're just a great guy. Simply put, you're
I'm easy, and then all I need is a Yuengling beer, you know, once I get there, you know, to Westchester, you know, so, you know.
Right, but, I mean, people must think, well, he knows him. He's known him for 8 years, no wonder he's happy with him. But, you know, but the genuineness in you is very refreshing, and that's something.
Thank you.
That's something I can, you know, it's just wonderful. But this is not just to make you feel better, but I'm glad it did, though.
I still appreciate it. I'm going to get my wife and put her on here and let you talk to her for a while, okay?
Right. What would she tell me, I wonder? But, I mean, it's just nice to see.
I want you to tell her.
Oh, all right. Okay, I got you. Well, gladly. But, I mean, it's just, I've met a lot of authors, so I know, you almost get to the point you know, but just by looking at the author, whether they're in a bad mood or not. We had a recent signing at the store where we had two women who were almost stalking the author.
Oh, my.
And it's a weird experience. You suddenly realize, there are some weird people in this world, and you really have to be careful.
I'm not all that handsome, like it, so I don't have to worry about that type of thing. Like,
I'm sure you've had women.
I know these other guys like Bob Crace, like it, and Lee Child, and all those guys, like it, and, you know, I guess the women just follow them in flocks, like it.
When are you the happiest? When you're actually writing the books, as you're starting to write the books, or toward the end?
I'm never as, you know, pleased with a book as, you know, when I'm writing it, and never as displeased with it as when it's finished, you know. I mean, it's kind of a creative dissatisfaction, I think. You know, I mean, you know, you really, you know, you need the energy to write the book, okay, but then when it's finished, you know, you're just like never completely satisfied with it. And, you know, I'm one of those chronic rewriters. You know, I will, you know, if it was left up to me, I'd still be rewriting The Cold Dish, you know, my first book.
Oh, that's a masterpiece. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, it's just fantastic.
You're very kind, like that. But every time I open any page of any one of my books, I look at it and go, oh, you know, I could have done this just a little bit better. I could have rewritten this just, you know, one more time. And, you know, I think that that's, you know, I think that's part of the creative process. I think, you know, if you ever get to the point where you open up one of your books, like, and just go, oh, my God, a great man wrote that. You know, I mean, I don't want to ever get to that point.
I think
at that point, you're just pretty much artistically dead, I think.
So. Cold Dish is one of those books that I remember where I was sitting when I was finishing the book, because I was enjoying the end of that book so much that I can see myself sitting there reading the book. I know exactly where I was, and I know exactly how wonderful I was feeling while I was reading that book.
Oh, thank you, David. Thank you.
And I don't say that, and it's not. I'm just not just saying that because I know you. That really happened. And you don't. How many books can you say that about, that you remember where you were sitting when you were reading it?
Oh yeah. It's not that many. I have to admit.
I still have pictures in my mind of you throwing that book in the door to try to get it published. It's such a laugh out of that when I think about it. I actually tell customers about that. I think that's too funny not to tell people about.
Oh gosh, yes. Like, I mean, that's, you know, and I think it's important also for young writers like that are coming up. I mean, you know, to say, you know, like this, you know, it's not going to be easy like that. You know, and if you're trying to do something a little bit different than what everybody else is doing, then it's going to be twice as hard.
Right.
You know, but that's just the lock, stock, and barrel of it. I mean, it's, you know, it's not an easy business, like that. But it's truly satisfying though whenever the lightning strikes, like that, or the Cinderella, you know, cowboy boot fits. You know, it's kind of wonderful like that, because everything kind of falls into place. You know,
I wanted to ask you: do you get to pick the color of your books?
Generally, I don't pick the color like that. What they do is they send me they'll send me rough drafts of, you know, the imagery, and then, you know, they'll say, well, what do you think about this, and I'll give them feedback and say, you know, yeah, this, that, and the other thing like that. And and I actually know the artist, you know, in Nashville, Tennessee, like,
mm-hmm.
So he and I sometimes, you know, we get in cahoots. That's a Western legal term like that, and we get into cahoots every once in a while like that, and kind of circumvent Viking Penguin, which I don't think they appreciate very much like that. But, you know, the less they know about that, the better.
What do you think about this theory that the second book is never as good as the first? Now, in your case, I loved your first two books. I think I thought were fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
But I mean, what do you think about that theory? I've had customers say that to me, that their second book is never this.
The difficulty is that, like, if somebody works for 17 years, you know, to try and get that first book, you know, published, you know, and they've just, you know, really honed it down, and it's become really a magnificent piece of writing. And then suddenly they get a book contract, and they're told, okay, we need another book in, 9 months. You know, well, that's 17 years of work versus 9 months of work. Okay, and sometimes that doesn't play out. You know, sometimes, you know, people need more time than that, you know, to actually, you know, write those books. And so I can see how, you know, that might be it. The other time is, you know, sometimes it's a one-hit, you know, wonder. You know, sometimes, you know, somebody has a really good idea for that first book, you know, and they haven't really thought about, you know, what the second book is going to be, or they used up, you know, all their ammunition in that first book, you know. So I can see how that would be a difficult, you know, process. But for me, it was just, you know, the door was finally open. And, you know, my gosh, I fooled them into thinking that they should publish my first book. I wasn't going to let them find out that they shouldn't publish another one. Like that. So
how great does it feel to know that there were so many people that enjoyed that book? I mean,
it's, you know, pretty wonderful. It's very wonderful. I mean, that, you know, my website, you know, I mean, it's you know, craigallenjohnson.com, craigallenjohnson.com.
Good.
And if you go to my website, like that, and you hit the contact button, that's my email. That's my email here at the ranch. There's no webmaster. There's no service.
Is that ever going to go away? I know it's
reading my, you know, emails, anything like that. You know, well, it may cut down. You know, it may get to a point where I can't answer as many as I want to. Like that. But generally, I try and answer, you know, every single email that I get.
Right.
You know, especially if people have a question, you know, or something that they want to comment on, or tell me a story or something like that. And you know, to me, that's you know, just another one of those wonderful opportunities, you know, in being an author, you know, in the time in which, you know, we live in now. I mean, I wonder about how many authors that have written, you know, that never really got the chance to get the feedback, you know, from people who, you know, read their books. I mean, that's kind of a wonderful thing to have happen. And, you know, I always think about, you know, authors that don't have any kind of contact button or don't have any way for you to get in touch with them or anything. They're kind of robbing themselves of, you know, one of the wonderful things about, you know, being a writer nowadays.
Right. It is. And you were talking about series before. What's interesting now is right now I'm reading an absolutely phenomenal book called Gone by Mo Hayder. And I suddenly realized it's not going to be a series. And I'm like devastated because I love the characters already. And all I can think of is I can't wait to read the next one in this series. But now I'm finding out it's not a series. So it's interesting how I've. Because usually I like to read series because I don't know something there's something wonderful about reading a series for me, although I don't mind reading a standalone anytime. I mean that as long as it's good.
It's a question of like that arc of story and arc of character, like that you have a much longer arc of character. You can actually watch those characters develop, you know, book after book, and see the complications, you know, that are the lifeblood, you know, of these characters, and you have a much longer, you know, period of time and a lot more.
But it's at some point you. Bond with the characters. Realize I want to know all about this character. I want to know.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that's that universality of the human condition that you know Steinbeck used to refer to. You know that anytime you're hoping to write, you know, hoping to do good literature, and if you're hoping to you know write good literature, you know, one of the things you're trying to get across is that universality of the human condition, something that we all have in common, a nerve that you're going to touch in the reader where they're going to feel like they know this character, they know these people, they know this place, and they feel like they're a part of it. And, you know, and that's part of that magic that you hope.
Well, how does each now, as the crow flies, how is it different from the other seven? Is there a difference in your mind?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, there are a number of different, you know, ways, like that, in the sense that, you know, Walt does not have the jurisdictional applications. He's kind of a fish, you know, out of water in this situation. He's under pressure, you know, from his family, you know, to try and do something, you know, about the whole reason that he's there. You know, doesn't have anything to do with this homicide investigation. I think it's also much more of an in-depth look at not only the reservation, but the culture, the society, the spirituality, so many other aspects of, you know, reservation life, you know, and Indian life, especially on the Northern Cheyenne Reservation, that I haven't really had the time in a lot of other books to develop simply because it wasn't a major part of the storyline. But, you know, in this particular book, it is, you know, a major part of the storyline. And so, you know, you get to meet a lot of the Indian characters that, you know, you've been introduced, you know, in earlier books like that. But then again, there are a lot of other Indian characters that you've never met before like that suddenly come to life.
And, right, and if Walt doesn't find this place for her to get married, his daughter may hate him or kill him.
Yeah, he'll have no wrath like an angry daughter.
Yeah, you don't want to.
I got two daughters and a granddaughter right there in Philadelphia, so I know, you know, that you do not. You better play those cards close to your vest. So.
What is there anything in your life that you would wish for right now? I mean, you seem to have everything that makes you happy. I mean,
I need a new tire on my 8N tractor. I've got a 8N tractor, and I need a tire I got to put on it. So, you know, if anybody's out there, you know, and has a really nice, you know, brand new 8N tire they want to send to me, I'd be happy to take that. Other than that, I'm in pretty good shape. Like, I really don't need too much. The irrigation system's running, knock on wood. You know, everything's been sprayed, you know, everything's all been put up. I mean, the ranch is in pretty good shape, you know, for me to go away from it, you know, for the. You know, until, you know, I guess I leave on tour, you know, next, you know, Monday, and I won't come back until July.
You have such a high confidence level, too. I mean, you're not, I don't mean you're full of yourself. I mean, you're very confident as a writer, and that's not, and I never hear you say, I didn't know how to finish this book, I didn't know what to do, I was all worried. you don't seem to have that, and it's amazing, because I talk to a lot of writers who, you know, they'll say, I'm not sure, I didn't know how to end it, or it's too much work for me.
Well, that's along with that outline thing that we were talking about.
Right.
Like, I always hear writers talking about writer's block, and I'm firmly of the belief that that's called writer's laziness.
Writer's laziness. Uh-oh.
case where, you know, the writer didn't know. I'm making fun of it like that, but as a general rule, I have to say quite honestly that, you know, when you break it down, writer's block is really just the writer not knowing what happens next. Well, if you have an outline, you always know what it is that's going to happen next. You may change that. It may be something different, you know, by the time you get to the point where, you know, you're writing the book, or, you know, you get to that specific point, you know, in the storyline, that plot point in the storyline. But nonetheless, I mean, it's, you know, you do have something to go with like that, and you always know what's going to happen next, and you can write toward, you know, whatever that event may be.
I'm curious.
So,
yeah.
For me, there really doesn't, you know, it doesn't enter into it. I always kind of know what's going on like that, and I always know. Whenever I type that first letter of the first sentence of the book, I know what the last sentence of the book is going to be. I have a really strong idea about what that's going to be. One of the things I tend to do with the books is I tend to kind of, what I do is I tend to refer to it as bookend, you know, the books. Like that. And, you know, if you notice, the way my books start out is the way my books end. I mean, The Cold Dish, the first book, you know, it starts out with Walt, you know, watching the Canadian geese, you know, the Canada geese as they're flying over. Well, it ends, you know, with Walt, you know, watching the Canada geese. You know,
I didn't notice that. Every book is...
Death Without Company starts off at graveside, it ends at graveside. You know, it kind of goes unpunished, starts with Walt, you know, reading a nursery rhyme, and it ends with Walt reading a nursery rhyme. I mean, each one of the books, you know, ends the same way that it begins.
I never noticed
kind
that.
Kind of a challenge to do that. And, you know, and I think it gives a certain amount of confidence, you know, to the reader when they're reading the book, to kind of have at least some basic idea to what it is that how the book's going to end.
Oh, they didn't put a new picture on the back. I was hoping there'd be a new picture of you. I think they've used that one before.
I have a standing deal with Viking Penguin that, because generally, you know, I mean, you know as well as I do. Look at my gosh, you know, 9 times out of 10, a writer shows up and you're like, when did you take this picture in high school? Like that was, you know, so one of the things that I've got is I've got a standing deal with them that every 4 books, I change my photograph like that, and so. As the crow flies is the second cycle. The first 4 books had a picture of me, you know, sitting in my old ranch truck, like it, and then the second 4 books, you know, was me, you know, sitting in a baseball dugout of all places. You'd never know, like that, by looking at the photograph. It's the same one, like it. And so I'm about due. There'll be, you know, a new photograph coming out with the next book next year.
How about that? I never knew all these things were in the contract. I wonder, I'm curious, I have to ask you.
It's not a contract, this is an unofficial deal that I have with them.
I'm curious what you eat and drink while you write.
What I eat and drink?
Yeah, I'm just curious what you said. I'm just curious, I mean, are you a munchy kind of guy when you're writing?
No, not really, not really. I drink coffee like that in the mornings, you know, to get my heart all started and up and going like that, but... you know, and then I'll break for, you know, lunch, like it, and come down and fix a sandwich and have that, you know, and then, you know, head back up, like it, you know, and get back started again.
I know I would eat incessantly if I was writing. I can just imagine myself, because I...
Well, I've gotten to the point in my life where it's not good for me to sit around and just eat.
Like, right. Yeah, but it certainly feels good there, doesn't it?
20 years ago, that wouldn't have been a problem, David, but now it's a little bit of a problem.
Yeah, it would be a problem with me, too. I'd have to curb my... Now, you always give us a little bit of a hint about the next book. Can you tell us anything about the title or what it's about?
I can. Like, I'm not sure if the title is going to change, but right now it's called A Serpent's Tooth, like that, which is actually from the line from King Lear, you know, that, you know... A mare's kick, or, you know, the sting of a serpent's tooth, and not so much sting as that of an ungrateful child. And it's actually, the book deals a little bit, you know, with some of these polygamy groups like that, you know, have moved in. There's actually one over in South Dakota.
This is the polygamy book, huh?
Yeah, with one of the Warren Jeffs, you know, kind of groups that was over there. And you know, it seems as though that's what the book is about, but then the book kind of changes a little bit as it goes along, and some different things happen, and, you know, we learn that maybe there's a little bit more to this situation than, you know, we at first know.
A Serpent's Tooth. Now, do you think you'll be able to keep that title?
I don't know. You know, it's according if I want to. They've never changed a title on me. They'd let me do what I want to with my titles. Like, and so, you know, it's just a question of whether, you know, sometimes, you know, when you give a book a title, you know, and then you write the book, sometimes it's like naming a child, you know. You get, you know, the child gets, you know, a year under its belt, and you're like, this was the totally wrong name, you know, for this particular child. So, you know, I have to look at the book and see. You know, I mean, I sometimes have working titles, you know, for books, and I'll, you know, they'll be okay for when I'm working on the book, but once the book is finished and I know what the book is about and I know, you know, the tone of the book and everything about the book, you know, it might be, you know, it may change. I don't know. We'll see.
Now, you're contracted for how many more? Am I allowed to ask you that, or is that a no?
I think I've got a contract for two more, but I'm kind of an indentured servant to Viking Penguin and Warner Brothers and A&E. Look at that. I need to, you know, keep writing these books. But that's good. That's job security in a situation where I'm just tickled to death to be writing these books. I'm pleased, you know, and happy. If somebody would have asked me and would have told me that I would have more fun writing the seventh and eighth book of the series, or the eighth and ninth book of the series, more than I did the first and second of the series, I would laugh, because I would have thought it wasn't possible for me to enjoy it, you know, any more than I was enjoying it. And to be honest, I am. I'm maybe more comfortable, maybe more at ease, maybe that confidence.
You're always comfortable, though. And I mean, I'm jealous of that. I wish I were as always. I guess if I were...
I don't know. Maybe I just fake it better than...
No, I don't think you can fake that. But I mean, if anybody out there is listening and can get anywhere near where you're going to be, I mean, I highly recommend you do it, because it's...
Oh, thank you, sir.
Because there's you'll never meet another man like him, that's for sure. He's a wonderful guy. And you're going to be, you know, I'll just tell people off, you're going to be in Montana, Texas, Arizona, California, Missouri, Ohio, Pennsylvania.
Pretty much everywhere. Like,
North Carolina, Georgia, yeah. Nebraska, New Mexico. Well, you're all over the place. Are they giving you your own airplane for this one?
No, they're not giving me my own airplane. Like, I haven't gotten to that level just yet. Like,
maybe you could use Stuart Wood's airplane. He always goes. He goes to his in his own airplane.
Yeah, so, I don't know. I think I kind of enjoy letting somebody else be in charge of the piloting. That's fine by me.
You're okay with everything.
I'm going to drive my tractor and ride my horses. I'm pretty happy with that.
That's true. Oh, wait, Southland in ER. How about that? I didn't realize one of the directors is from Southland in ER. Wow, you've got some major talent there.
Yeah, he's really just a great guy.
Now I wish I could sit and watch it tonight. Now I'm gonna.
Well, there was one. There's even a moment in the beginning episode, you know, where we're in this caldera up in the National Forest, you know, where Walt's cabin is. You know, it's a very picturesque little spot. It's an old Works Project Act, you know, Forest Service cabin that they're using for Walt's house, and it's, you know, really marvelous location like that. And they were getting ready to shoot on the first morning. And all of a sudden, just like magic, about 150 head of elk, you know, wandered out from the tree line right out into the meadow, right down below, you know, Walt's cabin. And, you know, I remember Chris Chulak turning around and saying, put, you know, Robert in the Bronco and have him drive down through there, you know, on the road, you know, so that we can see those 150 head of elk. And so, you know, they threw Robert in there and they drove him down through there with the cameras and everything, and it's really an incredible shot. You know, in the TV series, because Robert's driving through this, you know, 150 head of elk, and he's driving through it like it's morning traffic. He's like, you know, damn elk, you know, he's not even acting like, you know, it's any kind of a big deal that there would be 150 elk, you know, right there, you know, in his, you know, on his ranch road. And I remember Chris Chulak turning around and looking at me and going, if I wanted 150 head of elk in the opening scene, do you know how much that would have cost me? And so it was kind of an eye-opener to the process, you know, of film production.
Now, do we know that the you said there's 10 episodes of the first season. Is it all going to be Cold Dish, or how are they doing that?
Oh, no, it's in 45-minute increments, you know, and like a couple of weeks into the process, you know, I got a call from the screenwriters and the producers, and they said, we're having a really hard time cutting, you know, the Cold Dish, you know, down to 45 minutes. And I said, I bet you are. My first draft on that book was almost 650 pages long, so I can understand how you'd be having a little difficulty as far as that was concerned. And then the other thing is, with a pilot, it kind of has to be a self-contained storyline unto itself, like that, so that, you know, it can be shown to studio executives, it can be shown to networks and all this kind of stuff, and you know, and advertisers and all of this, and so it can't leave a lot of open-ended storylines, you know, in the very first episode. You know, it needs to introduce the characters, introduce the place, and also have a contained storyline unto itself. And so it borrows a lot of elements from the Cold Dish like that, but it's a shorter storyline and plot line. And then, you know, there are elements that run, you know, through all of the, you know, episodes like that have been, you know, taken from you know, the Cold Dish, you know, from all of the different books. You know, I mean, they pretty much have, you know, the rights to all of the books. conflicted, and so they basically, you know, use bits and pieces, you know, from all the different books and all the different episodes, and then, you know, and then there's a storyline arc that's, you know, per episode, and then there's a storyline arc that's, you know, throughout the entire season, like that, and so it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different, you know, than trying to just, you know, slavishly, you know, replicate, you know, the books, you know. Which I really don't think would work, you know, to be quite honest.
Now, that scene you almost broke down. Is that in the pilot?
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
oh, good. I can't wait to see it. I like scenes that make me cry. call me a wuss or whatever you want. I'd love to cry.
Hey, you know, I mean, you want to be involved with these characters.
You want to be moved, too. You want to really feel like you know these people. You know, you don't want to
care. Yeah, you want to care.
I mean, I hate to condemn the Waltons, but I never really cried during the Waltons. I shouldn't pick on a classic TV show like that.
Well, you know, I don't know. There was an awful lot of happiness in that. Like that, you know, this is a crime fiction, you know, and so, you know, sometimes you see people at their best, and sometimes you see people at their worst.
Well, I'm addicted to Justified, so I'm sure I'm going to be addicted to this series too. So, I mean, it's just a matter of time.
Well, I hope so.
Well, we've just about run out of time. It's always wonderful to talk to you, Craig. You're really a special guy.
Well, thank you, David. I appreciate it.
And your books are really special. I'm going to tear up now. I don't know why. I always get moved at the weirdest times. I don't know. That's just the kind of person I am. The new book's called As the Crow Flies. It's out from Viking, and it's in all your bookstores. Now, exactly what date it reaches the bookstores, I think some of them have it already, don't they?
No, it's not out
yet. Oh, really?
Not out yet. It's the 15th is the actual post.
Oh, it is the 15th. All right. So it is. You won't see it till May 15th, hopefully.
Won't see it till May 15th.
We won't be playing this till May 15th anyway, so.
Well, good. That'll work out.
But it's been so great to talk to you. And this has been David's Book Talk, and we'll talk to you next time.